Thank you all for tuning in to another episode of the Barrel Chat Podcast. We are a podcast that provides an unfiltered look into the craft beer industry from the untrained palates of two dumbass outsiders. I am Matthew Muncy, and I'm joined, as always, by Dustin Wood. Dustin, how are we doing this week?
You know, I feel like I woke up on the wrong side of the bed today. So hopefully the podcast goes better than the workday did.
Yeah. Yeah. I didn't have that problem today, but I do know that feeling. And we got good beer, so it can't go that bad, right?
Just forget the whole thing.
So this is another Friday 4-pack. If you are new to the Friday 4-pack format, we did change it up a little bit. And we will be discussing a few beers and talking a little bit about what we've had over the past week. Then we are going to deep dive into a beer festival that we went to, so kind of give a little bit of a review of that. We have a news article that we found, coincidentally, about beer festivals that we are going to discuss. And then around Indiana, which I didn't bring any notes, but I think we have a few that we know offhand. So
one's this weekend, I think.
Yeah, we'll go with that. So you can follow us on Instagram. We're at Barrel Chat. And you can also find us on Facebook. We are on Threads. If you use that, which I don't know if anybody actually still uses Threads. I think that was...
Do there, you use X?
There and gone. No. No. God. So stupid. Why? Why change the goddamn name? I do not. You can also
check out our Discord.
Yeah, that's right. The Discord. That's what I was like. There's something else here. The Discord channel. So if you're looking for an invite, just shoot us the link. We're just in there chatting it up. It's basically just a little bit of old school kind of IRC chat room style thing. If you were into those kind of things way back in the day. Come in, talk with us. We got a few brewers in there who answer some questions. I posted this article about the beer festival stuff in there, and Cody Moon of Science Project, who I'm wearing their shirt tonight, great shirt, and he kind of chimed in a little bit about what he's had to kind of deal with over the last 2 years. So I thought that was pretty fascinating to get an instant response from somebody who's in the game. But you can come in there and chat with us. It is by invite. You can also find those. We usually post them to our stories on Instagram and Facebook from time to time. But if you want something, just let us know and we'll hook you up. All right, let's jump into the beers. So usually we discuss what we've been drinking. I haven't been drinking anything. I had a medical procedure done, and so when it comes to that or being sick or anything else, I just lay low and let the body heal before I really jump back in. But I did have two. I had a cider that you had given to me.
Oh, yeah. I saw you post that.
Yeah.
I enjoyed it quite a bit myself, so I'm excited to see kind of your ideas about it.
So this was a strawberry passion fruit pink guava from Castellium Ciders. And I'm not going to lie, this was really just good. It is intriguing to taste what other people make as ciders and then to taste ash and elm, because ash and elm ciders just taste so unique to me, at least, compared to some of these others. Like, this was kind of very fruit forward. There was still a bit of cider in there, but I feel like ash and elm lets I can't say cider for some reason. They let that shine more than
most other places.
And I don't know if it's the technique or if it's the apples that they use that maybe make the difference. That would be curious to know whenever we can get Joseph on to discuss cider making.
Yeah. I don't know how they do it, but I know that they don't heavily residual sugar theirs or additional sugar either.
That could be a big part.
So that's a big part. But the one that you're talking about, was a nice balance. It did have that like residual sweetness, but it wasn't like sticky or like grossly sweet, like a woodchuck or a like Angry Orchard or something.
Yep.
But it also wasn't all cider. It had the cider crispness to the back of it, but it was nice and sweet with the actual like flavors. And I don't remember what specific fruits they were, like passion fruit or something.
Strawberry, passion fruit, and pink guava.
Pink guava.
But it was very fruit forward. But not in a bad way. The cider really came through. But it felt like a better version of like a woodchuck or an Angry Orchard is how I would kind of put that.
It reminds me of like Iceman and Strawman back when Angry Orchard made those, which were their big bombers of ciders. So they were their like limited release batches that sadly I don't see ever anymore. But they were like nice higher ABV versions of their ciders, so they weren't quite as sweet and they had some of that like residual kickback of the apples.
Okay. Yeah. I could see that then. But this one was definitely good. I assume you got this at like Total Wine.
We got that.
Or this might have been your Michigan trip.
Nope, that came from the Jungle Gyms.
Oh, okay. So if you're out at Jungle Gyms, they have one I saw on Untappd. They have a blueberry pineapple
version. I think we saw that, but the pink can won over to the blue can or whatever it was.
Yeah, I really want to try that blueberry pineapple one. So I drank that, and then the other one that I drank was Guggenhaus, and it was their winner's milk jug, which I did post. I'm just trying to get through my backlog of literally everything. I have so much beer from South Carolina, San Diego. My dad randomly had a case of Osiris from Sun King. Like, I don't even know why. And he was just like, here, you can have this. I'm like, okay. Like, I'm going to take it because no one else is going to drink it. But now I have that. And the wife is like, we have too much beer.
I haven't had an Osiris in a long time.
Yeah. Yeah, it's been a hot minute. So, but yeah, that's all I've had since we went to Chicago.
And we'll cover that.
Yeah, and we will cover that.
So, really, I'm not going to talk too heavily about what I've been drinking other than one specific beer, because I have been drinking the three beers that we're going to talk about on the next episode. So I don't want to kind of spoil the episode itself and kind of give my feedback about those beers candidly here. But I did make a journey down to Kismetic yesterday. That would be Monday the 24th. Sat with Ryan, actually. He was down there and Nicole wasn't there and it felt really weird. I was like, hey, it's the man, the myth, the legend. I never see you here. He's like, yeah. I come here in the morning and I just leave. And I was like, I fully appreciate that, man. But we got to talking about a bunch of different things and how they're going to do some cool things in the near future that I don't want to put on air yet, but they're definitely going to do some cool things. We need to get them on the show to talk about it. But be on the lookout for that coming up here in the near future with Nicole and Ryan from Kismetic. But I did try, they had a coffee lager there yesterday. Man, he was reading off all the things and he goes, I want a coffee lager. And I was like, yeah, that one. I want that one. And it was beautiful. Every single like inch of it. It's super crispy, nice and crushable with that like sweetness that you get from like a craft lager. But also the coffee added the body that I want in something with coffee in it. So the coffee was second note to the actual lager flavors, but it was there. Excuse me, and more like it would be like a super light roast coffee almost.
I feel like coffee with the lighter beers just pairs beautifully. Yep. Whereas sometimes it can get a little bit lost in a stout because of the big bold flavors and roastiness that come out of a stout. They somewhat shine more in your blondes and the cream ales like that.
Yep, you know. And like the light. The regular ales, because that's what chocolate is.
Oh, yeah, yeah.
From Zwanzig's. But, yeah, just something. Look, again, pandering, whatever it may be, but I don't pander, so it's just a god damn good beer. And everything there is just like that. It's just clean. It's well brewed. You can talk to the brewer about it and he'll tell you everything about it. It's not like he's scared you're going to copy his recipe or something, but it's unique in the sense that he brews so many different styles. Every single thing is immaculate. So definitely try that if you're over there. I've enjoyed it. They had that. They still had the black hazy IPA with that chocolate orange. They still had that on tap. Yeah. That was really good. And there's a few more styles coming out here in the near future. And then some bigger news coming around the corner for them. But definitely a cool visit. If you can get down there when Ryan's there, it's even more fun. Like, Nicole's awesome, and I love Nicole, but asking Ryan the questions is like asking a thesaurus the questions.
Nice. Yeah, I want to get back there. Ever since we went there after Ash and Elm, I just want to go back. I wish I lived close enough to there. I mean, I'm glad I don't, because I'd be very broke and I'm already fat, and it would be
they'd be worse. Tired of us. And
but I wish I had a place around me that made beer that good,
or had their own beer on tap ever.
Yeah, that's true.
No shout, Josh.
That's true too. So then we have. So I mean, obviously we haven't really been drinking a whole lot. But we do have a few beers that we brought for the show. So tell us a little bit about this first one that you picked up. You picked this up when
on the way to Chicago.
On the way to Chicago, yeah.
So I've been working with Mike and Rusty from Blockhead Beer Works for my current, like my real life job. And I was chatting with Mike. I was like, man, you know, we loved you guys at Winterfest. We sat and chatted with you for a while. We came back and
was
chatted.
Was it those same two guys?
Yeah.
Oh, okay.
And I was like, we came back and chatted to you. And he was like, yeah, you're coming to Chicago, right, for the Moorfest? And I was like, yeah. He's like, swing by. I'll make sure that I'm at the brewery. I'm not normally there Fridays, but I'll schedule myself to be on shift when you come through. And I stopped up there. First off, the brewery is beautiful. It is open windows, like huge windows, the whole thing. And their logo is awesome. So their like Blocks logo that's on the side of the building is beautiful. When you walk inside, it's got this bar that's got bright colored, they're not Lego bricks, but they are like tiles to semi look like Lego bricks behind the bar. The bar's like the centerpiece. It looks like if you've ever been to 45 Degrees, it's got the very similar, same like bar appearance.
Oh, okay.
So it's very prominent in the building. They serve amazing food, sushi, ramen stuff, all kinds of like regular foods too. But I had one of their spicy, like whatever those like fluffy taco shells are at like ramen and Indian places that have the meats inside of them. Yeah. I can't remember what they're called.
Yeah, I don't know.
But something non, like none, I don't know, whatever
like
it was.
Non bread?
I don't think that's
not
the right.
That?
Yeah, I don't think that's the right term for
like
it.
Like a pita almost?
At those places. But they're fantastic. But this one was spicy, like sriracha drizzled with maple syrup chicken. It was just dumb good. Had some of that. Walked around the brewery, checked it out. Their brewery has legit big Lego block wall dividing the distillery from the brewery, and it's the coolest thing you'll ever see at a brewery. It's just these huge like 10 by 4 bricks that they built a whole wall with.
Oh wow,
it's really cool.
That's pretty cool.
Did the whole exploration there and then took home some things. Matt and I drank the white stout from them, which was fantastic. And probably the coolest growler I've ever seen in my life.
Yeah, their growler is really neat.
It's Star City Growler Works. I talked to Ryan about potentially if they do growlers ever, doing those growlers in purple, teal, and like in one of their other colors would be super cool and match their aesthetic really well. We pulled out Blockhead's Shinobi Lager. It's an American lager brewed with Sriracha Ace hops for a nice lemon kick. before I look at Matt to figure out what he thinks of the beer, this can is fantastic. I would legit pick it up off of any shelf just because of it's shiny. It has a like unique design on it, but the Ninja is so artistically done and so well thought out that I would love to pick it up every time. And then right under the Please Recycle This Can, they have their version basically of a gummy bear as their logo. And it just is, it's such a happy logo. I enjoy everything about Blockheads. So if you get a chance, go check them out. Talk to Mike, talk to Rusty. The bartenders were great. The mixed drinks looked beautiful. And they have like fun names like Tom Selleck and stuff like that for their nice craft cocktail names. They also distill in-house, so you can get their liquor.
I do like this can design. It gives me like 80s video game vibes.
Yeah.
It looks like...
Like a Tekken or...
Not even Tekken. It looks like an NES box art.
Okay, yeah.
Like
kind... Or like the sticker on the front of an N64 game.
Yeah, because it's just like a very generic Ninja, but that's exactly what you would see on NES, Genesis, and it's kind of that, like, the design, the line design as the background just kind of gives that kind of 80s vibe. That's the first thing I thought. My mind immediately went video games with this. Like, Ninja Gaiden is what first came to mind. So this, I pulled up on Untappd, and there's really not much to it, but it is a 5.4% ABV, and it's just an American lager. Obviously, as you mentioned, it's got hops in it. 3.66.
That doesn't shock me. First off, they're in small town USA. So if you make a lager that doesn't taste like Bud Light, people are going to be confused by it. Second off, I don't think it's their most popular style, but I was super interested in drinking a crispy from a location that is kind of known for their like crazy off the wall styles.
My assumption with this, reading some of the written reviews, is that the small town people may not necessarily understand what like the hop in this.
Yeah, sriracha, like, the flavor.
Yes, because like someone wrote, not light, but enjoyable or drinkable. No, it's very light. I mean, this is...
I crushed too much of it too fast already.
Yeah, this isn't like a double lager. Like, I don't even think that exists. But like the fact that someone says this isn't light doesn't even make sense.
So
there light. There is a hoppiness to it. Someone did kind of complain about bitterness. You get a little bit because of the hops, but not anything super noticeable. It's a very light
bitterness.
I think the problem is the can says Shinobi Lager, and if you don't know what American Lager means, yep, and I would guarantee a lot of people don't, they just think it was made in America.
Yep, because, you know, yeah, yes.
Yeah, and so, but American usually means that there's hops in it, and so you're looking at a hoppy lager, and that's going to dissuade a few people who, why are you putting hops in my lager? That kind of crowd. So that does suck, because this is definitely better than a 3.66. This is very nice. It's very refreshing. It's very crisp. I do like the hops in this. I am usually anti-Americanizing everything, outside of IPAs, obviously. But this is very nice. Like, the hops are not overtaking it. They're adding to it. It gives it that kind of lemony, zesty flavor kind of to it. I really enjoy what they've done with this beer.
Yeah, I think Rusty knocked this one out of the park as far as a lager on the scale that they have and the time they have to lager things. But it really drinks like a super traditional lager that if you put like a Bud Light or something into... I don't even want to compare it to Bud Light, but something like that. If you put it into a glass and rim it with like a lime or a lemon zest on the top, that's what it would feel like. Like, that's what you're drinking. Just a little bit of like the rimming with the lime zest.
Yeah, and it's not even that much. That was damn good.
Yeah, we drank it way too fast. It went down like water, not in a bad way, but I want to go on a kayak trip and want more with me.
I was going to say, I just want more of that.
I saw that they just tapped the last keg for the summer of this beer at their location.
That's a shame.
So I think this is a summer seasonal, and they probably do a heavier lager with less like summer vibes. This is a summer lager. This is a great way to describe that beer.
Yeah.
Like a summer lager.
Yep. Because you want it refreshing. You want it crisp. You don't want it too heavy. 5.4 is not heavy at all. Not even medium.
Man, imagine like summer shandy running through a lager process.
Actually, that's not a bad description.
It's not quite that.
Like if the lager process just kind of stripped out all the sugar.
Yep.
Because it's not just heavy, heavy like lemonade taste.
But it's got that vibe. Like it's a nice summer patio. Sit out on their patio. Sit out on an open air space. Go kayaking type of beer. Like, but a beautiful. And I don't dare call it a lawnmower beer. It's like just a beautiful, beautiful crispy lager.
Do you know, are they in like Total Wine? Do they distribute it all yet?
The only two liquor stores that they distribute to are in, one of them is in Lafayette and one of them is in the area they're at.
Okay.
Valpo area. And then they're in the Tomato Bar. If you go down there, it's like the craft beer bar of Valpo. They're in there. Mike used to be their beer buyer, so that makes sense.
This is a brewery that I feel like once they actually get in, Science Project's the same way. Once you're able to get your stuff into Indianapolis, I think that's when you're really going to see a bigger kind of.
He can't keep up now. That was his problem. I was talking to Mike and Rusty about it. They just can't keep up now with the demand for people coming. And he said, right now, I'm really focused on us potentially being one of Indiana's like destination breweries where people go because they make good beer, not because of gimmick shit, but because of good beer.
No, and that's fantastic. It just sucks.
It sucks for us.
It sucks for people who really want their beer but can't make a 2-3 hour drive every single week or something. You know, it makes it hard to be like, I want to give you money, but I can't. And I understand why, but it does suck.
They're a place that I would go back to, though, for sure. And one, they've invited us up to do a podcast anyway, so we're going to line that up. Have them on, talk about some of their beers, brew a beer with them. We'll have a barrel chat beer there too, which could be fun. Who knows what it could be, but it's gonna damn sure have a Ninja Turtle on the label.
Okay, I'm down with that.
Because there's three of the like 24-inch tall Ninja Turtles there.
Oh, wow.
And there's a bunch of other little Ninja Turtle things throughout the building as well.
All right, yeah. Yeah, it definitely needs to be.
Or like a representation of the turtle. It'd be cool to have Hoppy as a Ninja Turtle on there.
That would be pretty badass.
With their bear.
I'd be all right with that. All right. And the second beer we got here is Sun King Brewery's 14 Karat Golden IPA. This was brewed for their 14th anniversary. It says 14 Karat is an anniversary IPA with a blend of 14 different hops for a full host of hop character. Okay. I'd like to know why it's called a golden IPA.
It is very gold.
Yeah, I mean, that is true. So maybe it's just because it's...
It might have had like a specific golden like wheat or something put into it, or a golden barley or whatnot.
Yeah, there's just nothing on the can, nothing on Instagram. 6.3% ABV, 34 IBU, has a 3.62.
That's low.
Overall rating out of 431 check-ins. So I've not tried it yet, but this can is awesome. It's it is very gold, very sparkly. Has like a golden diamond on the front of it. Carrot is K-A-R-A-T, which I believe is.
I think that's how you spell the diamond.
I believe that's how you spell the diamond. I feel like it's with a C, but I don't know. Something about it looks like that.
14K, 14,000.
Yeah, you could be onto something there. I do like the graphics on this side. They remind, again, going back, they remind me of like video game, like tiles, like stuff you would see of, like power ups or something that you've collected or things like that. Just very old school.
My mind automatically when I saw this went to the boxes that you jump on in Crash Bandicoot. I don't know why.
Oh,
just
okay.
Something about like the breaking them and getting the ooga booga out of it.
Yeah, these are. I really like that. It's pretty cool. It's got some like stars and stuff. They obviously went above and beyond. Everything works though. So despite the fact that it's kind of all gold and everything else,
there's enough shade and enough like different levels of gold.
Yeah. And it's just, it's not like overwhelming. There, it's not on top of each, you know, every element's not on top of each other. There's a lot to it, but it still feels like there's enough space in between each element of design. I enjoy it. That one, if you saw it on a...
Whoa. Okay. Each one is a different hop. 1, 2, 3, 4, 5, 6, 7. There's 14 boxes. Each one is a different hop, so it must be like the representation of each one of the hops in a vector graphic format or in an illustrative graphic format. That's cool as shit. There's so much detail in all these little hops. The designer had a blast with choosing these on probably Adobe Stock, but these are cool. And then it's like almost a double helix going up the side of it, like the DNA of the beer. I appreciate this can actually quite a bit.
I do too. I like it. It's one that would obviously stand out on a shelf.
It stands out for Sun King. Like,
that's true.
Although they've gone down a different hole with their graphic design recently. I feel like they got a new designer.
Yeah, everything's a little bit more fun.
Yeah, a little more playful, inviting, and less like hard and fast Mayan, or not Mayan, like what it was originally, like the god
design. Yeah, the sun gods and stuff like that.
I also liked that the Sun King logo's in one of the little bricks, too.
Yeah. Yeah. They did a really good job with this can.
I had this on draft. One day I went to finish work at Sun King, and the lady came over like 27 seconds after I sat down and was like, "What can I get you?" And I was like, I have no idea. I've been here 27 seconds, and I have to scan your QR code because God forbid we have real menus anymore. And she's like, "Well, what do you like?" It's like, again, everything. Don't ask that question. And then I was like, "What's new?" She's like, "Well, we just did this 14K. And I was like, "Well, that sounds fun. Let's do that." Didn't even ask what it was. Like, sure, 14K. Let's do that. That's one better than 13K. Or no, is it 30K that milk stout from, the brewery in Louisville that we went to, that does Bo and Luke against the grain? I think it's 30K is their milk stout. But
I don't think I've seen that.
That's what reminded me, like, that K was. But then she said it's our 14-year anniversary beer, and I'm like, yeah, give me that. But I enjoyed it then, and I'm gonna kick it over to Matt first, let him talk about it a little bit.
I don't think I like this beer.
Yeah?
Yeah. There's nothing wrong with it, but one, I'm not a massive IPA fan, and there's just way too much going on. Like, all 14 hops just kind of blend into like this. It's not even a hop bomb. It's like it's almost like a malt bomb and a hop bomb just exploded together
and made a baby.
And made a baby, and it just, you get like this kind of malty bitterness.
Yeah, it's interesting to me. What really, what I like about it is that it is damn near a crushable IPA. Because it's smooth. It doesn't have a whole lot of like yuck within it. Like if you were to chug a traditional IPA, you would feel like garbage.
Yeah.
but I'd feel like this is like a sessioned version of a big ass IPA.
It does feel, it does kind of have that, that feeling of being like a, almost like a 9%, and it's just all kind of that, I don't even know what you would call it, but it's like not, it's not like fresh hop taste. It's like the doldrums of the hops. Like there's just kind of this, this very dark bitterness to it. Like
it's an interesting beer. Would I drink it 5 or 6 times? No, probably not. But is it worth for me trying something that somebody threw 14 hops into to figure out how it breaks down? Yeah. I think it's a little warm right now too, which may have let some of the flavors change a little bit. But I personally enjoy it, but I do see where you're coming from, but because I get a little bit of the overwhelmingness with this beer.
I feel like there's definitely something here, and maybe you are right. Maybe it has warmed up a little bit. It's still cold. Like, it's very cold, but maybe not, you know, keg cold.
Yeah, maybe not lager slash IPA cold.
Yeah. But to me, at the same point, like, you're not going to chug this thing, so as you're drinking it, more of this is going to come out. And it, there are going to be people who love this beer. Like, there's no doubt about that. But I think I'm one of those people who, like, a 3.6, yeah, like, probably a 3.5 is where I'm at. It's not my favorite. It's also why I hate ratings, because, like, there's nothing wrong with this that I can tell.
There's no off flavors. There's it's got just a great mouthfeel. It poured perfect. It had a head on it. It's still holding a head.
It's a gimmick beer that doesn't hit for me. And that's all it is. And
yeah.
Like, it's not
fun. It's unique. People are going to love it. I'm going to send it to some friends in the Florida area to let them try it, although they fucking have a Sun King in Florida now.
Yeah.
But neither one of them live anywhere near that. Turns out Florida's really long and takes a long time to drive through. And Sarasota's up like here, and the rest of them are down here. So, but fun beer, honestly. Not my favorite from Sun King ever, but I do appreciate it. I appreciate the graphics a lot. And try it. If you're out there, let us know what you think, because maybe we're wrong. Maybe we got shitty decisions. Who knows?
Yeah, I mean, as I found out recently with the post about beer festivals, it depends on where you ask as to what kind of responses you're going to get.
Well, old people versus normal people.
So, talking about beer festivals, we went up to Chicago, not even Chicago, what, Huntley?
Yeah, it's a northern suburb of Chicago.
Like up there near Elgin, about an hour northwest of Chicago. I've now been to Chicago, technically, well, yeah, to Chicago through Chicago twice since March. Literally both times has been with tornadic
crazy
weather.
Crazy-ass storm.
There was, in both times, yeah, like literally tornadoes both times I've went up there. I don't know what is happening. Maybe I should just stop going to Chicago, but
Chicago people would really enjoy if you stopped that.
Because we stopped at Foreign Local on the way up. You stopped at Blockheads and Viking Artisan Ales, and then we met up at Foreign Local, which was fucking fantastic. But then it was like I was getting through Chicago, and then all of a sudden you get all the Apple alerts, tornado watch, tornado warning. It was like, what the fuck?
Dude, it was crazy rain and crazy wind.
Yeah. So that was a lot of fun. But then the next day we went to the Moore Beer Festival.
Moorefest 23.
Moorefest. And that was Moore Brewing, and they have a location up in Huntley. I remember looking at the Google Maps of this, and my thought was, hey, this is going to be inside. Because you look at Google Maps, and if you don't know anything about the place, it's so goddamn big that you assume it's a giant, like, warehouse or, like, you know, like, convention center type place.
Or, yeah.
Yeah. And then we get there. No, it's just a massive fucking brewery.
Big-ass, beautiful brewery.
Has all this land behind it. And you're just like, holy crap, like, whoever bought this spot, like knew what they were doing.
Look, when we first pulled up, well, I guess when we first were driven up because we Ubered like smart people, slash we lifted because fuck Uber. But we literally looked at each other and were like, this place is huge. And it felt like Flicks without a movie theater.
Yeah.
Like it looked exactly like the Flicks building
here. In a giant backyard.
With this like 3 football field space beside it. But we walked inside. I don't know that we were supposed to walk inside, but we walked inside to take a leak and it was beautiful inside. They had a barrel room off to the side. They had like a merch space, 2 huge bars. Like it was a beautiful facility. Outdoor space was cool. They had like roll up garage doors that I assume have tables in it normally when that's not the check-in area. But we walked in to check in, went through the Osner app for checking in, which other than Matt had to download it, it's a pretty smooth process. Once people have the app downloaded, it was really smooth to get in the door. We got banded and we stood in line for a little while with a bunch of 500 other people that were standing in line. And then some dude gave us some beer.
Yeah, that was interesting to watch people go and buy. You could go buy 4-packs and stuff like that before, like as you were waiting, since we had just general admission, we had to wait an hour. So people were going, buying alcohol to drink in line to then go inside and drink a fuck ton more.
Of heavy ass beer.
Of super heavy beer. So like that mindset was kind of like, this is interesting. Like I've seen that happen before. I went to the microbrewery festival 1 year and people were in line, you know, handing stuff out. And, you know, I feel like to a point it's not that bad, but
there were people passing around vodka in water bottles.
No, I did see that
in front of
us.
Oh,
yes. Yes. I remember that now.
Yeah.
Yeah. Cause that lady took that drink. She was like, whoop, this ain't water.
Yeah. It was just a full water bottle full of, my assumption it was vodka. It could have been rum or tequila, but
yeah, I was gonna say it definitely. Well, I guess unless there is white rum a thing.
Yes.
No.
Well, then. White rum, white tequila, or I guess Blanc tequila and vodka all are, I mean, Everclear and fucking you could do.
Oh, God, could you imagine a water bottle of Everclear?
I mean,
we're going to take this back to the 90s, folks.
It's probably been done.
Oh, yes.
But, yeah, like Matt said, the line was interesting. It was pretty smooth once it started moving, too, to get into the festival. Now, first gripe about the whole thing. You walk in, and you cannot walk back out without, you can't go back in. So we couldn't have gone and got a fucking water from the merch table.
Oh, God.
Which is the start of the water debacle. But we couldn't leave to get a water from the merch table. So we just
which
had to...
Which is funny because that's what we were told to do.
Yeah.
By the people who wouldn't sell us water.
Yeah, the lady that was running this, like, the DD section said, oh, yeah, go over the merch table. And the guy at the entrance was like, I can't let you back in, dog, if you leave. I was
which
like,
makes sense, but...
I get that. Then bring the water over here. That's the first pet peeve. I'll let Matt dive into some of his, but the first one, the real big one that drove me nuts the entire day. Don't ever do this at a festival. They had big ass tents, which I appreciate the tents keep the brewers and shit out of the sun. But they put the fucking company logos in the branding. Two pet peeves here. They put the company logos and the branding behind the bartenders, so you had to duck under the tent to see them. That is stupid. Put it out front where I can see it so I don't have to cut people in line to then look and see who's there and see if I want to drink their beer. Second, they did it in all their font and their colors. Why? I get that's your festival, but God damn it, use their logo and stuff because then it is recognizable to other people.
Yeah, I didn't really think about that, but like as you say that, it's like, okay, if I go somewhere... I may not remember the name of the brewery.
But I can remember their logo and their graphics.
Yeah, especially if it's something like that stands out really well. You're going to be like, oh, I remember that logo. They were at that place. And then, you know, you may go through your mind Rolodex of what you had, or you can go through your Untappd to try and figure it out. When it comes to that, we sound like old men, but I mean, at a certain point, I just don't understand some of the choices that are made with some of this stuff. So first off, they had so much room to work with. Like,
yeah.
Their field is fucking massive. Like, think military park.
It's literally 3 football fields long and wide.
Yeah. Like there's so much room. They took all, they had what, 60 plus breweries, at least the ones who showed up, and we'll get to that too. And they just put everyone side by side by side like we're at Winterfest. Why?
Why not have 10 tents?
Yeah, spread them out a little bit more. Give a little bit more space. All that happened, it was a pretty hot day. But all that happened was people would get a beer and then just go stand at kind of the back of the tent. And so you didn't know it's just like Winterfest.
Yeah.
You don't know who the fuck's in line. You don't know where you're going. You don't
know where lines are going.
Yeah, where's the line going? Like, is this line for, like, I remember we were looking,
Arcane was the line.
But we saw the line. We're like, who the fuck is this for? Like, you don't know who it's for. So it's like you have to either just get in line and wait until you get there, or you can walk up and figure out why everybody's in line.
Walk back 100 people.
And then you may have, you know, there may be 10 other people now in line. I didn't really understand that. It was very crowded underneath that tent. There were kind of just people everywhere and in the way. I don't know. You had more room that you could have spread it out. Like, they spread out the porta potties.
Yeah, really far.
Yeah. They would have one porta potty and then a station to wash your hands and then another porta potty. And there was like a solid gap in between all of them. Just, that's the one place that nobody gives a fuck.
Yeah, put them right next to each other. One hand washing station. How about save some money on a hand washing station and buy 5 more water stations?
Yeah. Yeah. So that's kind of, to me, it's just more of like a weird thing of like, why does everything need to be as close as possible when it comes to brewers? Maybe there's a logical reason for this. Maybe it has to do with,
delivery of ice or
equipment. Yeah, but you could spread them out.
Yep, more.
More to where that, like, an ice delivery isn't going to kill you. But maybe, I don't know what it takes to, like, run some of the things that they're pouring on and stuff. But
most of those are CO2 jockey boxes, yeah, so there's no power unless you got a bottoms-up unit.
Yeah, so, I mean, that's the only thing I can think of, but, yeah.
There were no power out. There was nothing power running to them.
Yeah, so it's just, like, why do they need to be, it was tables literally just next to each other, no gap in between whatsoever. Yeah,
there were 2 breweries per table too.
Yeah,
like, but why? You have all this space. You can't give a brewery a full table to lay out their merch and not take up the space next door to the other brewery.
Yeah, it is a gripe I have at Winterfest, where Winterfest has so much room to use, and
they
yet
stick you in that one room,
and yet they don't separate people. Like, all those lines kind of just converge together. You don't know where everybody is. Then you got people like 450 who kind of have their own fucking giant space, yeah, which I assume you pay for, but still, like, there's just something about it that I don't like everything just so clumped together. Like, just spread it out. Let it breathe a little bit.
Share the love, man.
Yeah. Something. The water fiasco. So there was water. Let's not say that there wasn't water. They had
Monster
two
water.
Of these, like, they basically looked.
Wait, there was
like,
two? Where was the other one? On the
it
other
was
side?
On the other side.
Okay.
Yeah, where there was no beer.
Yeah, where the porta potties were.
Yeah, because that's where you want to fucking go. So they had two, and they were basically like, think of like a what are those, like the Gatorade water coolers from like sports, and just make that thing even.
Like, yeah, it was like a
10 times that size.
500 gallon drum with like little faucets.
They had the spouts.
Like 20 faucets throughout the circle.
They had a bunch of the spouts, just like you would see on a water cooler at a sporting event or whatever. And so you could walk up and clean out your glass, fill up if you had a bottle, like a water bottle or something. You were good to go. The problem was there was only two of them. There was, if you did not bring a water bottle, there was no way for you to obtain a water bottle unless you waited in line at one of the
Four food trucks.
One of them ran out of water, wasn't selling anything. The one that we stood in line for was probably about a 30-minute wait. When we literally got to the front of the fucking line, it was another 15 minutes just to order two bottles. We ended up getting Gatorade to refill, but two bottles of Gatorade. It took 15 minutes for them to even take our order. And I'm not mad at them because they were slammed.
It's just poor planning on the...
And it was literally like 30 minutes later, they were gone.
Yeah, they just left. They were like, they were just screw out. It, I'm out. Like,
I'm assuming they must have ran out of food because they had the good, they had the good looking food. But still, it's just like...
Yeah, they had like...
It was like...
Deconstructed burgers, basically.
Yeah, like in beds of fries and like
a... What was that thing called? They had a really cool name for it, but it was like a deconstructed burger.
So... I didn't like the fact that we had to stand in line and buy water bottles from a food truck. Whereas if you were a DD, you could walk up and just be handed a can of Liquid Death, which was a massive sponsor there. Presumably,
we tried to get one, but you had to pay cash.
Yeah, so you had to pay cash, which is another stupid thing. So many of these places are making us use a phone to look up a fucking menu still, but yet you can't bring out a little card reader. Like, well, let me tap my phone and give you $2 so I can get a can of water so I can just use that can to fill it up. Now, a lot of people are going to be like, this is stupid. Just go stand in line. But you have to imagine, we paid $95 to go to this event, and I wasted 30 plus minutes of my time there standing in line to get a singular bottle of water.
Yep.
Because I didn't know to bring a bottle. Like,
because
you don't have that problem at Winterfest.
I didn't think we were going to be allowed to bring things because there was no detail about the event anywhere.
But it's like, I've not been to an event where you literally couldn't easily get water somewhere. At least at like Winterfest or the ones in Indy, they all have the
faucets
water
in front of them.
Yeah, they all have the water jugs in front of the stands.
Which is another thing that I think was fucked up at this event.
Yeah, I was getting to that.
So to clean your glasses at most beer fests, you have a little faucet right before you get into the choosing part of the line, and you get to fill your cup with water. And if you're dumb, you throw it away. Or if you're like me and Matt, you drink it because hydration. But literally, they didn't have any of those. They gave them spray bottles. Like a spray bottle that you use to clean windows with.
So they then sprayed out
inside the glass like 50 pumps each time.
Oh, and it was a ton. And so it took forever.
Like 3 minutes.
Every single person. And then on top of that, when that bottle ran out, they had to go to the water dispenser, which was not anywhere near their tent, fill it back up, and come back to then do it again.
Yeah, just some of the things were not thought through well.
And this is fine if you're in year one, maybe year two. You're in year six and you have people using spray bottles. Maybe there are laws and regulations up in Illinois that we don't know about, and maybe that's the cause of all this, but you can't expect people to know that kind of shit. So like if we're shitting on you and it's outside of your control, like, sorry, but like,
it was just weird.
You know, it's weird. I don't understand why it was so difficult. Like, if people started passing out and stuff, like, that's a problem. And you had, there were, like, nobody in the DD lines going.
Yeah.
Like, you can't
just $95,
you can't give me a fucking can of water. I paid you $95.
That they gave you those waters.
And you couldn't give me a $1.50 can of water. Let's call it $2, because that's what Meijer charges you for that. A $2 can of water could not be handed to me after I gave you $95.
Well, that you were gifted that water too as a sponsorship piece. I guarantee it.
Yeah.
But all bad, well, actually, let's not say all bad things aside, because we have a few more things to hit on here that really highlight Indiana greatly.
Yeah, it's weird when Winterfest looks like a fucking champ coming out of this event in terms of kind of set up and organization. And I know that they've been doing it a lot longer, and maybe they had some of the very same issues way back in the day. But
Now, check-in was way better here than at Winterfest.
Yeah, Winterfest check-in.
Winterfest is a disaster.
It could be a nightmare.
But Indiana did not represent well at this event. Not even, like, kind of well. Okay.
Well, so, it's really hard to represent well when you don't even show up.
Okay, so let's start at the tents were laid out alphabetically with numbers first. So, two of the major breweries in Indiana start with a number. 18th Street and Three Floyds. And 450 also starts with a number. So, they were literally 1, 2, and 3.
They were technically 1, 3, and 4 because War Pigs was technically 2.
Yeah, but War Pigs was part of Three Floyds, so.
Yeah, but it was... If we talked about how it went.
It was the first four booths, basically. Yeah. And War Pigs would have been a representation from Indiana because it would have been the Three Floyds people pouring there.
Yep.
To hit on Three Floyds real quick, they didn't fuck show up. That's not putting it nicely. That literally, they were not there. They had a sign, they had kegs, they were not there.
There was nobody there pouring. And we were
nobody.
There.
Nobody.
That thing ended at what?
Five.
Five, and I think
we were there until like 3:45 or 4.
Yeah, and nobody ever showed up?
Nope, nobody. No, nobody told anybody from the event. I talked to one of my people that I know. His name's Aaron. He was there more as director of events for years or whatever his title was there. He was like, yeah, nobody told our boys that nobody was showing up from Three Floyds. So awesome work there, Three Floyds. High five.
Yeah, that's so weird. That is just... How, like,
but how?
Yeah, or like if you can't show how is there nobody there to pour?
Yeah, why couldn't you call and say, hey man, we can't make it. You know, our truck broke down or whatever that may be.
Because we can go into another gripe of mine that I have when it comes to fucking volunteers.
Oh yeah, that sucks.
Who are 21 years old and don't even look like it pouring the goddamn beer. How about we don't ever fucking do that again? But if you can have that for places that. Didn't show up, how was that not communicated enough to then have them set up?
Hell, I'll pour your beer, Three Floyds, if you don't want to show up to the event. Like, here's zombie dust, zombie ice, and your barrel-aged behemoth. Like, that's what you're going to pour anyway.
Yeah.
And whatever you're going to bring for War Pigs. Probably salmon pants. But that was bad enough. And then another Indiana brewery canceled. I assume, because they weren't there, and they didn't have a banner, so good for you. You at least told them ahead of time. But Windmill didn't show up.
Yep, because I remember we got back to the house, and we were talking about this, and we're like, wait, Windmill was supposed to be there. And then we were like trying to figure out, like, okay, where would Windmill have been? And then we're like, well, it would have been next to Zool.
And we were there for a while.
And we were in the Zool area for quite some time, because that's where a lot of the good beer was. We're like, oh, that's right. Windmill was not there.
Yeah.
Or I do not remember seeing them. There was no post on Instagram from them about even being there.
It was wild. So they didn't show up either. Now, at least they told the venue, I think. Or maybe they told them that day and they just didn't put their banner out. But at least the banner wasn't hanging with an empty table.
Mm-hmm.
That is terrible representation for a state. Now, to be fair,
I'm going to love when they were there and they're going to be like, yo, we were there.
No,
like, I don't remember you being there at all.
They weren't there.
I didn't see Memes Cake on any board.
No, they weren't there. But that's bad representation for Indiana when Three Floyds' sign is hanging and there's nobody there. To be fair, they're basically a Chicago brewer anyway, so maybe that's bad representation for Chicago. But the breweries that were there, might have had the worst beer that we tried there.
Yeah. Yeah, 18th Street was pretty bad.
God, the cherry cheesecake or whatever, it was bad. I poured it out.
Yeah, it was not good. Like,
something was off, the flavor was wrong. Yeah. It was disappointing. It was not the 18th Street that I know or known.
It was real weird because when you think of 18th Street, you think of really good beer. And we had the cheesecake, and we had whatever else
there. We checked them both.
Both of them just straight up sucked.
Yeah, we were just highly disappointed.
What the ever-loving fuck is this?
And then the best part about the whole day was the line to 450 was, like, nobody deep ever.
Oh, man, there was nobody in that. Like, that was interesting to see, since, you know, here,
that's the line.
That's the line. And
well, both of those places.
But they also weren't unique at this event, because Mortalis was there.
Yeah, Tripping Animals was there, and Zool was there, and Dream State was there, and all kinds of places that make those beers and make them better.
Yeah.
So that's the thing is, like, sure, they were hype trade game. They're not worth anything anymore. Like, yeah. Nobody trades them anymore, and they're sitting in their cooler, which sucks a bit for Indiana, but also,
yeah, I don't care enough for that beer style to really give a damn. If you bet your entire thing on a fad, you know, that's what kind of happens.
But after breaking down the bad things, there was some goddamn good beer.
There really was. Do I feel like I got my $95 worth out of this event? I personally do not think I did. It did make me, on the ride home the next morning, reevaluate how I think about beer festivals, which then led to the question of, you know, what would people think about having a beer festival where it was just straight beer styles? Like, you know, no, I think when I put the word gimmicks in there, it kind of triggered some people, but
it may have pissed some people off, but you know just Indiana breweries,
just no adjuncts, no gimmicks, nothing like that. Just straight beer styles. And got a lot of replies of like, well, there's an Oktoberfest. Okay. But now I've not been to a proper Oktoberfest before. Are they pouring porters and stouts at an Oktoberfest, or is it all just German beers? Because my assumption is it's all just German beers, which is not what I'm kind of talking about.
Yeah.
You know, it was very eclectic mix from the people on Instagram. I wasn't looking for a bunch of yes people, but
that's what they were.
they kind of were. And then people pointed out some events that already kind of do this that are actually around us. Versus kind of what we got on Facebook, which was very different answers, as if I had offended people somehow by asking a question. Like, I will say this. It was a very simple question, and it came from a point of, we went to this beer festival. We were sitting there that night logging what we drank, and it was difficult to remember what we had. It was when you came across it, you were like, I remember that one was great. Zool is the big one for me.
There's a few that I have that are pretty big, but
that, and you're just like, yeah, that's right. That's the one. But at a certain point, like the BA stouts, we probably had six of those.
Ten or more.
I don't really remember anything about those. The one that stands out to me the most was not even a BA stout. You know? And so it just kind of got me thinking, like, that's really what these things have become. And I understand that that's what people want. And I'm not saying that all these beer festivals are stupid or terrible. But I'm thinking of it as a way of, like, how do I kind of evaluate when I go to a beer festival? What is it that I should actually be looking for? Because I think about all these places that we tried. And if all you had was BAs or Saisons or, you know, crazy stuff, that's all you can really try. I didn't try any IPAs. I didn't try any lagers. I didn't try any blondes. I didn't try any basic ass shit that would have told me what that brewery is about. Because just because your BA beer is good doesn't mean that the rest of your shit's good.
Yeah. What are you like? Is it hiding something? Could you spring the stout that was the base beer for that?
Because I brought this up to someone of when we discuss on this podcast and just to each other and even to other people, when we discuss what beers tell us a brewery is great, it's always classic styles. Blondes, mild ales for me. You know, lagers.
Pilsners, lagers. Hell, you can even look at some of the things like a Hef. Like, if you can you make a good Hef? That's a big deal. But
and that's what the brewers also sit there and say. It's those are the kind that when they see that, that's when they know, oh, okay, this person knows what they're doing. That's not what you see at a beer festival, though.
Because that's not who goes to the beer fest.
I know.
That's the problem. Like,
but like that's kind of where I start to reevaluate of like, okay, from this one beer at Zool, I think Zool is probably fantastic. But I can't be definitive in that because, A, I tried only one beer. That's another problem I realized about a beer festival for a personal take. And then I only drink one of theirs. You only drink one basically everywhere you go. So you don't really get a good idea. And then again, it's something crazy off the wall.
Now, I assume Zool makes good beer throughout, but that's just an assumption. So to kind of hit on some of the things that really stood out to me specifically. First thing first, at a beer fest, I think the winner of the entire day was a meadery.
Oh, yeah.
Which is like just out of this world, blew everything that I... We had two or three of their meads, and everything was great. But that was Garagisti, Garagiste, meadery out of Tampa, Florida, which I found out is closing this year, apparently.
Oh, really?
Yeah. He's going to open something else and do something else. Man. But the one that really, really, really won the show for me, and as far as untapped ratings go, I rated this 0.10 below what I rated Savoy Truffle, which was a 4.8. I gave this a 4.7. So really, really high. Really, really good. Like, damn near perfect. But it was their double barrel Reboog, R-E-B-O-O-G. It is their signature peanut butter and jelly product, aged in both a 7.5-year Laird's apple brandy barrel and a 6-year Willett bourbon barrel for just short of 2 years. Holy God damn it. That beer, or that mead.
Oh, yes.
That peanut butter and jelly.
I was trying to remember
what
the hell the other peanut butter and jelly one was. That one. Yeah, I had.
So good.
Because we had two. Hold on, let me go find the other one. This is great content. Was the CYPM cheesecake.
Which was also crazy.
How
good.
You actually do a fucking cheesecake. A blend of organic polyflora honey and orange blossom honey, along with black currants from Italy, black plums from Chile, and blueberries from the U.S., then aged on toasted Slovakian oak, sugar maple from Vermont, and Brazilian Amburana staves, plus the addition of Madagascar vanilla beans and buttery cream cheese flavor. Well, fuck, no wonder they're going out of business. That's like a million-dollar mead.
No, yeah, so... They have these meads at cons. If you want to try the Reboog regular edition peanut butter and jelly.
This shit's at cons?
They have it at cons. It's $59 for the little fucking like 120 milliliter bottle.
Never mind.
It sucks because I would buy it in a heartbeat, but God.
Yeah, that would be a good one to like split.
Well, Shelly and I are going to do a mead evening here. So I might break down and buy one or two of them and bring them for that mead tasting here. So there's a potential, but still, like, that's so expensive. Wow, I understand you're using these outrageously expensive ingredients.
Yeah.
But Jesus, but, dude. Like, $58. This one was 15.1%, and I could have drank it like water.
I was gonna say, the problem is like, that's hard to get people to buy that. Like,
around here, especially. Like, yeah. If you didn't know what if you had never had it, why the fuck would you buy that?
I would never spend that amount of money on...
Well, when Superstition is right below it, and Superstition is like one of the well-known meaderies in the entire country, if not the world, and their bottles are like $35 to $39, like, what are you going to buy, right? Like, the one you've heard of.
Yeah.
That's the downside. But also the downside is $59 is a lot for a bottle
really
of mead.
That's just... So that's one of those where it's like, it feels like it's worth it, but at the same point, like, I don't know.
I'll buy one at least for the thing, because I guarantee they're still there, because who the fuck knows what it is, and it's expensive.
Yeah, that's true.
But to me, I think they won the festival as far as everything there that was crazy. A close second place for best beer in my book was Orchestrated Minds Brewing. And I was pointed there by a coworker, the owner and head brewer, and his wife, who both work there full time. We're there. His name's Dusty. Didn't catch his wife's name, but went there, or Davey or Dusty. I don't remember. But dude, we had the 4 vanilla bean bourbon barrel aged rye Bondaloo from them that was damn near as good as Savoy Truffle.
Yeah.
And he explained how each vanilla bean plays a different flavor profile in it, how it wouldn't become over vanillaed with the amount of vanilla, like things that he used and how he used it. And he wasn't wrong. He did a beautiful job. And then they had this farmhouse saison called A River Runs Through It, which, holy crap, was just like the perfect saison. It was, felt like a farmhouse. It was very saison, thick, but like carbonated out the ass like you expect a saison to be. So good. So good. So this one is a collaboration between them and Tarpon Brewery out of Fort Lauderdale as well. Both of them are micro and nano brewery. What the fuck is the difference between a micro and a nano brewery?
Size, I guess.
Which one's smaller?
Nano.
Okay, that's weird still, but A River Runs Through It. For this beer, we took our house saison and teamed up with our buddies from Tarpon River Brewing to source lemongrass and mangoes from our friends in our backyards. We added lemongrass to the boil and pressed over 60 pounds of fresh mango, then added them to the secondary. Using lactobacillus and farmhouse yeast, we created a wonderful light but big ABV farmhouse. It is a 9% ABV farmhouse ale. So good. Orchestrated Minds definitely blew it out of the water.
They really did. I enjoyed both that they had. I enjoyed talking to that guy. He was super cool. Very nice.
Yeah, like welcoming dude. Like,
yeah, we had another experience where we walked up to someone and they were kind of a dickish.
Yep.
About the whole thing, which was super weird. Like, I don't know why.
The last brewery to me that really stood out, there were some other great beers, but I mean, we talked about Zool a little bit and we'll hit it a little more, but Monday Night Brewing out of Atlanta, Georgia was fun for me. They had the Spoken Wisdom, which was another like a lambic, but also a super like sour saison-y type of beer.
Yeah. I just kicked Matt's ass. I just cannot drink those kind.
And Matt had a BA beer there that I think was pretty solid too. But I mean, a lot of interesting places, a lot of interesting styles were all there. Like Corporate Ladder was there, Ology, Forager was fun. So Forager and Humble Forager are the same brewery, but Humble Forager is like their shared two side project. Forager is their like weird off the wall crazy like saison stuff, and then Humble Forager is what you see out in the world. Vale was good. Oh, winner of best signage for me personally, Matt was waiting in line for Arcane or whatever the hell that long line was.
Yeah,
and I was like, all right, I'm gonna go over to Toppling Goliath and get some beer, and I walked into the Toppling Goliath booth and they had a sign that said Fresh Batch Series Ginger Snap, which is a pastry stout, but it's had like a good limerick for like the Fresh Prince of Bel Air. But at the bottom of it said, don't worry, we didn't put lacto in it. I was like, fuck yeah, that's the one I want. Like, that's right. Like, advertised to me, baby. Mortalis was great. We had 2 of their hydras, still probably some of the better of the fruited sours out there.
Yeah, yeah.
And then Tripping Animal I enjoyed, but yeah. First place we went, I mean, was the Moore Brewing. We had their Henna, which was good, but not great.
Yeah, I was expecting a lot more out of that. And
I have 2 of the cans here, so we'll see if potentially that batch wasn't the greatest. And then we went to Zool, which we talked a little bit about, but I believe, I can't remember what the Zool grape, whatever. Oh, a PB&J mixtape by Zool.
Yeah, fruited sour.
Which legitimately tasted like a beer version of the mead that New Day used to produce.
Yeah, it was fantastic. And it tasted just like PB2. There was like some grape jelly in there. but it was like a nice, well, it was, the sourness was kind of like a grape sour. So it didn't really feel like you were drinking, you know, like a Berliner or something, which I know we kind of rant on from time to time. And there's definitely some hypocritical moments that you run into at a beer festival. Don't get me wrong. But there was something about this one that was just so pleasant, and it was light and just
cold as fuck, which was perfect.
Yeah, cold and crispy, and you know, just it really kind of blended everything just perfectly together. And it was the first one we had, which kind of helps, because at a certain point you're like, ah, yeah, this is good. Like I said, you don't really remember it unless you're writing shit down. And so that one to me just really, really stood out because of just how well done it was. And I really wish I would have got back in line and got more from Zool to figure out what else they made.
We're going to have to make a trip to Tennessee.
Yeah. I mean,
Knoxville, maybe? I think.
Yeah, I stay in Knoxville every summer for a night, so
Zool
I
it
just
is.
Have to go down a little bit early that day instead. That place was fantastic. As you mentioned, I really liked the Orchestrated Minds. That four vanilla one was very interesting. The Rye B.A. Bondulu, I think that's how you say that.
That's what I said, so.
And I just remember being like, how does, like, my first thought is vanilla bomb. Because that happens a lot from time to time. Just doesn't make any sense. But that happens from time to time in a barrel-aged stout where there's vanilla. And as you let it kind of warm up, all of a sudden that vanilla is just super overpowering.
Yeah,
and
that's so all
it's
you
just
get.
Like, okay, how the hell are you putting four different kinds of vanilla in here and it not become overpowering? But when you drank it, it was just everything blended so well together. And it almost felt like that, like the different versions of vanilla kind of mellowed everything out a little bit. It was very unique. And that's kind of what I appreciate, is like, if you got a different kind of take on something, that's one thing. But if we're just doing another BA, you know, it is what it is.
I need to get there, because I think most things, and his name's Davey, I had to look it up, but most things Davey would do, I think, would be very similar to something like a social project, a side project. The unique breweries that are doing styles that are crazy, but doing them perfectly.
The Forager Brewery,
yep,
they had Magic Bars, which was a barrel-aged stout. Seven barrels consisting of double stout, 36-month brandy puncheon oat wine, and imperial milk stout barrels were blended from various ages, spirit types, and size formats. The old ale is loaded with graham crackers, toasted coconut, vanilla beans, roasted peanuts, cocoa nibs, butterscotch, and marshmallow. There's a lot fucking going on in that, but it was damn good. And they had a saison there, right?
Yes.
I feel like that's what you got. And it was incredible.
Yeah, Humble, or the Forager Brewery, which is the Humble Foragers, like, other brewery, is really, really well known for really, really good beers. They're like the scratch of wherever the fuck, like Wisconsin, maybe? I don't know.
And then the last one that I had here that I wanted to kind of point out was that, for whatever reason, peanut butter and jelly seemed to be the theme of this, because
yes,
there were three of them. So the other one that I had, or I guess that we had, peanut butter and raspberry jelly. Can't fuck up a raspberry beer.
You can't do it.
A gluten-free sour conditioned on peanuts. Then they added delicious raspberry juice to make it taste just like a peanut butter and jelly sandwich. This is Barntown Brewing out of West Des Moines, Iowa. Fucking fantastic.
Out of the middle of nowhere.
Yeah. It was truly awesome. Like, that was one of the last ones that we got. There was nobody in line anymore. And it was so good. That's kind of what I liked, was just some of the weird stuff. A visit from the Fruit Lady Banana Coconut Cream from Wiley Roots Brewing Company. This was a pastry sour. They call it a smoothie, but it wasn't smoothie style, as we know. It says smoothie style unpasteurized fruited sour ale with pureed banana and coconut cream. But it didn't give me the vibe of Mortalis, 450, Hoosier. It
didn't leave gross residue in the glass.
Yeah,
and
like
stuff
Mortalis
like that.
Did.
Well, that. So did friggin' when we drank the first beer we got, we had to get it, our cups rinsed out because yeah. the line somebody brought us a heavily fruited sour from Moore, and it left like this coat of yeah. grossness on the glass.
Yeah, that was a bit much. But I think from the beer perspective, they brought it, man. Like, that's where I understand the $95 because some of that shit is crazy. And I bet was made specifically for.
Oh, yeah. Some of them didn't even have untapped check-ins until that day.
Yeah. And so it's like clearly they were making stuff for this event. And if they're paying people properly, I'm okay with that. I do kind of wish that.
Got like a bag or
no, I don't want anything from the events because that shit's just gonna end up at Goodwill. I wish we knew a little bit more about where our money went.
Yeah, that's fair.
Because it would be interesting to know, like, how much of my ticket goes towards, and I'm not, and I don't want to say I don't care, but like, did everybody bring that shit for free, mm-hmm. or did you actually pay people? Because it sounds like a little bit of both goes on in the world, and you know, maybe it's none of our business, but at the same point, like,
fuck, it's our business for sure. It's our money.
It would just be kind of interesting to know, how does that work? You know? Yeah. Maybe how much are you making off this ticket? I'm still going to, you know, people are still going to buy the damn thing. But like, if I know that you're actually buying these, like, that was something that always kind of impressed us with New Day and the way that they handled, what the hell was that Mead Fest called?
Meadful Things and Outsiders.
Yeah. Was she talked about, I buy enough kegs. Once I know how many people are coming,
and
I
then
make
I cut
sure,
the ticket sales off.
Yeah. To have enough kegs bought. And I pay for those kegs.
Yeah. She pays like she used to pay what they would charge
yeah.
retail.
And like, I understand that that's not really always feasible, but like, I feel like I would be more inclined when I look at something that says $80 to not sit there and just say, I don't know. I don't know if that's worth it.
Yeah.
Knowing like, hey, 50% of this is going towards the breweries that are here. All right, sweet. Like that I can be a little bit more behind because I can't physically give them money. I do wish people would bring merchandise and stuff. I understand why that could be a little tricky at a brewery event like that. With a
or
bunch
have
of
a merch
online.
Booth like
that would
that
be kind of cool
space where you just had a merch booth for each location or whoever wanted to bring merch.
Yeah,
like, why
you could
is
be
that
like,
not
hey,
a thing?
Hey, we're gonna have like, this if you want to bring some merch
because well, they do that at concerts where the main band has their concert or their stuff, but then right next to it is the like starting act
yeah.
or the
like
stuff
if you
like
go
that.
To Old National,
yeah.
it's they got three different tables.
That's how it was in Fort Wayne the last time we were up there for that location too. Where they had the main booth and then the two side booths were the two other openers. Like, that's a badass idea.
Yeah. Yeah. And that's just smart. So that would have been kind of cool because there's a few places there were some places that even had merchandise, but they weren't selling any of it. And it was just like, well, this would be a cool hat to own, but I can't physically. Yeah,
like,
buy
why
it.
Is this here? Like,
yeah, it was a bit odd. But I think overall, I'd give it like a 3.75 out of 5 for an event. I left a little bit whelmed, but I also I think part of that was my fault. I think going after all those big beers, I didn't handle the water situation for myself personally correctly because yep. we drank a bunch of beers before we really were like, we should probably get water. You're just kind of fucked from
there's no way to catch
that.
Back up.
Like, yeah. It's real hard to catch back up. You don't really, there wasn't really that many places to kind of go sit down. Like there was like a middle section of like tables and stuff, but it wasn't that easy. Like you saw most people like standing around eating and everything. By the time we were hungry, the only good sounding food truck had bolted.
And then everybody else had 2 hour lines. Like,
because there was only, what, two
places left because one was a snow cone place.
I was gonna say
like
there
that.
Was a snow cone place and only two actual food trucks.
Who
so when
the brings
other
a snow cone truck to a goddamn brew fest?
So when the other food truck left, there was one food truck and that line was fucking crazy.
Yeah, we literally got into an Uber and made it to downtown Elgin.
Right? Yeah.
Yeah, before we would have gotten food at the other place.
Yeah, it was a bit weird, to be honest. Like, that, the whole food situation was
They have a kitchen, a big kitchen in the location. Let us walk to your friggin' tap room and eat.
Or, like, bring that food out. And
do a tent.
And do a tent, yeah. And, like, I don't know, serve people.
Look, was it fun? Yeah, I had fun. I had some great beers that I'll probably never be able to get again.
Yeah.
I got to meet some people that I work with. Some good, some not. Not like my company employees, but like people that I've onboarded. I got to check out some places that I've always wanted to try. Like, I've heard great things about the Forager Brewing, and I've just never been able to get it because they don't go anywhere. And how often am I going to get to where they are?
Yeah.
So it was fun that way. And then it was fun to be able to talk about this on here because it's, you know, we've both never been to a beer festival outside of Indiana. We've never...
Oh, that was your first? Really? Yeah.
We've never seen Indiana fuck things up so badly. That was cool. Good job, guys. High five. But it just is a terrible way to represent a state that has pretty solid beer. Like, hell, I would have preferred Sun King be there.
Well, I think the bad part is, like, when you're on that list, especially as a Three Floyds, like, there may be somebody who's like, I'm interested in trying this for maybe the first time.
Yeah.
Or, you know, like, BA Behemoth. Like, I don't feel like you can just
people get love that
super easily. So, or maybe you can in Chicago, but maybe not Huntley. And it's just like, hey, you just no show. And, you know, that just kind of ruins a lot of, that's the equivalent of, you know, people paying, you know, a bunch of money to go to a sporting event. And then LeBron sits out that game. And it's like, this is the one fucking time I could come to this.
And now I'm watching you sit on the bench in your suit. Like,
yeah. And it's like, I want to try multiple of your things. I don't want to necessarily go spend $20 on a six pack of Zombie Ice or Zombie Dust and maybe not like it. Like, that's, that to me is where I understand the festivals come into play of being able to try things and stuff like that.
We saw people from Arizona that were there that literally came in for, it was a birthday party, but they definitely came in for this as part of the event.
Yeah.
And five or six other states that were represented, like, people flew in from different places for this event. So I don't know. Maybe we were just too critical.
I think, yeah, I mean, I feel like some people would probably say, could probably say that, but a lot of it's just the ancillary stuff. And I don't,
the small details.
Yeah. And I don't think a lot of it is too big of a deal. Again, you need to have food at these events. If your food options are not, are so limited that one of them literally fucking leave before the event's done, that's a problem. I understand that you may not be able to control that, but again, you're in year six.
You have to plan for that.
How do you not have more than two food
and
trucks?
And space them out.
Yeah. Again, there's so much space in this area that is just unused that you could have done better. You could have parked those. Well, maybe not. Maybe those needed to run on electricity
Most
somewhere.
Most of those have
something.
Their own generators.
I was thinking, put those fucking things like in the middle of that field.
Yep.
And or do like a little food truck thing and you could just have them all back to back or something.
Yeah, where they had. So this event was set up like basically Winterfest if you took out the middle booths. But if you had a square space and you put all the beer on the outside,
yep.
Then they had this empty like tent where people could go sit down. But if you literally took that tent out and moved it somewhere else and put all the food trucks in the middle, you would have everybody walking around food. And there was still enough space. Like, it wasn't like lines would have hit one another. The only line that would have hit them would have been Arcane. And I still don't know why that line was crazy.
Yeah, I don't really care for that beer. Yeah, I don't know. The water situation was the biggest one to me. I just think that that's such a
give me water
stupid. Like, it's fucking water, and it's not that expensive. You could have bought bottled water to just
from Costco
to hand out to people. Like, again, you charged me. We'll call it $85 because I know that the $95 is taxes and shit. But you charged me $85 for a ticket or $80, whatever it was. I think it was $85. And water just wasn't even a part of that. Water was an afterthought in a way. Like, I am grateful for your giant water tower that you continuously pump water into from a hose. but you gave me a 3 ounce glass.
Like,
so am I supposed to just stand there and just chug water out of that? Like, is the expectation that I go get a beer, walk, drink it, walk to that water jug, rinse out my cup, go get another beer somewhere? Like, why the fuck am I just backtracking all day long to clean out my glass? That's all I want to do. I want water on top of that, but I want to clean out my glass. Why are we using
one location?
One
or two, technically.
Two, but I mean, like you, I know it was over there because people talked about it, but I don't really remember seeing it. Yeah. I don't remember seeing anybody at it. The spray bottle nonsense. Jesus Christ. Like, just get it together. Like, it was such a weird showing. It's one that I don't know if I'd go back to, but I'd be interested to see what kind of improvements come out of it.
This was the first year that Aaron didn't run it for the past, like, five. Mm. So,
well, that's not great considering what we heard about the water situation last year. So, let's not go down that road. But, yeah, I know this episode is running pretty long. We can kind of, I guess, briefly touch upon this news story since it does kind of match in with a lot of the things we've talked about. So this is from Axios Denver. It was the death of the beer festival is jolting the craft beer industry. I feel like that's pretty hyperbolic.
That's definitely
headline.
That's definitely a clickbait title.
Yeah. And so what this kind of comes from, it says what's happening to premier festivals that draw the nation's best brewers. The Breckenridge Big Beers and the Weldworks Invitational decided not to host the big price tag events this year after seeing waning interest and rising costs from similar events nationwide. That's not super surprising. Said earlier this year, the Oregon Brewers Festival, which started in 1988 and became one of the nation's largest, canceled its 2023 event and hit an indefinite pause amid falling attendance and tightening finances for breweries. So I think this kind of plays two factors. A, most of these events are all the fucking same.
Yeah, they like, don't pay anybody.
Yeah, but it's like, when you think about it, and this isn't me shitting on Indiana On Tap, but Indiana On Tap puts on like 12 festivals a year.
Shit, sometimes two during the same weekend.
And we went to a lot of those back in the day. So unless things have drastically changed, you usually got the same beers from the same places at all those events. There wasn't really much of a reason to drive to any of these events because you weren't really getting anything new.
The only place that we ever did was like the Whitestown Fest where they had the homebrewers competition.
Yeah. And I understand that like a lot of this is you're trying to bring in people in certain areas, you know, because there's lagers on Lawrence. They do the one down in Brookville, Indiana now, which I think is a great idea to do one in small towns like that. But like for us, why would I go to lagers and then go to Brookville? Because I know I'm probably going to have the same kind of beer. Moorfest was different because of the attendees. Whereas a lot of what's going on around here is there's not much outside. And if it is outside, it's usually like people from like Craft Roads are the ones pouring, which is not terrible, but sometimes you want to be able to talk to a brewer. You know, that was a problem with Moorfest is we went to one. I don't even remember what it was. All I remember is that there were a bunch of like 21-year-olds fucking around behind the table.
Was that?
Exactly. They were fucking around behind the table.
I think it was Vail.
And were smartasses. And it was just like, why are you even here? Like,
yeah, we asked. So,
I think it was Vail.
Yeah, I think it was Vail. But we asked, like, this dude had like a camera that looked like a keychain, basically. And we were like, well, that's cool. What is that? And some girl back there was like, it's a camera. Well, fuck yeah, it's a camera.
Yeah.
I just saw him take your picture with it. Like, I want to know what it is.
But it's like, why are volunteers pouring?
And why are you 12?
Like, I don't understand that. Like,
whoa, another thing that really fucked me, like, in my brain, while at the festival, there were fucking kids in car seats.
They were not
like babies.
Kids. They were babies
at the
like,
festival.
Legitimate. Because I remember having this conversation with my wife when I got home. My biggest thing was, did they have to buy a ticket for that baby?
I hope so.
Because what is the difference between that? When we were talking about under 21, could I have brought my 13-year-old to this event?
Probably not.
You know, I don't know what Illinois' laws are, so maybe you could. But would I have had to pay $85 for her to come to the event? Are babies somehow excluded from a lot of this stuff? Are there laws that, you know, in Illinois that at beer festivals, if you're under 2, you're free, you know, that kind of thing, or 2 to 12, you're free. But it's just like, when I went on there, I didn't see a kid's ticket. Yeah. Does that baby count as a DD? Can they get a DD ticket? Could I have bought my daughter? Yeah, I should have brought my daughter and I could have got a free fucking water.
You could have just had her and be your water getter.
We wouldn't have talked about the water nonsense at all. We found our loophole for next year.
It's bazinga.
So fucking stupid.
But I wholeheartedly think that these, and again, not like Indiana just is the references that we have.
Yeah, it's all we know.
But I just feel like the festivals are dying here, and they're dying because we don't bring in people from outside of this area. So it's the same thing in a different city. So while it's great if you do it in Greencastle, because nobody in Greencastle goes to Beer Fest except for like 20 people that I personally know. Cool, you're getting maybe some other people. But if I go to that festival, I'm probably going to be underwhelmed with the selection of stuff there. Now, does that mean that the beer is bad? No. But have I had it at 14 other festivals? Yes.
Yeah. And I think that does slightly become a problem, because then when you come back the next year, what has changed? Probably not a whole lot. You know, you're still, your breweries are probably still bringing the hits. You know, I think of it like Sun King. If you go to most of the events, Sun King bring their mains. And then at the smaller ones, I don't know if it's still like this because I haven't been to a smaller beer festival in a long time. Winterfest and this Moorfest are the two I've been in like the last 3 years. They used to just bring the main three and then like a sour and maybe something else. Yeah,
like Velour Soccer Mom or something
like but that. But it was never more than that. And like, that's fine. But when you come back again the next year and you bring this same exact thing, what am I trying different from you?
Well, that's fine unless you're like us. And then I think we're just the outliers. But even locals.
But I mean, like, think about someone who's not like us for the locals. If you just bring the exact same thing every year, what makes me want to spend $40 to go to this event? Like,
yep.
There's just some weird things when it comes to that. I can understand why it's dying. The prices have gotten a little bit high. $40-$50 is a lot to go to a beer festival, especially if it's a family kind of thing. You know, you're spending $100 to go drink some beer. Like, you go out for a really nice night at a brewery to spend that. You know, there's some camaraderie and stuff that go with that, but you know, that's just to get in. Then you're paying for, you know, potentially babysitters, you're paying for food, Uber rides, you're paying for food, water, you know, a hotel maybe if you're going out of town, or an Airbnb. Like, there's a lot of factors that play into that just from some of this. To me, when I look at it, is there's not enough variety of type of festivals. Like Moorfest was, we're gonna bring in all these crazy breweries and they're all the big hitters that we know. You know, Winterfest is, we're going to bring everybody from Indiana, but it's not even everybody from Indiana because it just considerably gets smaller and smaller every year, it seems like. But we're going to bring in all these people and like, okay, that's great. But then nothing else is fucking differentiated. Like, there is no...
Like, where's my stout festival? Or like,
or
a specific festival
or where's our festival where somebody's bringing in the big boys from out of town, you know?
Like, why? Yeah, we have one. It's, I mean, two technically. Three in Indiana. Three probably in Indiana. Four in Indiana that bring in people from outside of the state. $450, their fucking corn maze thing.
Oh, yeah.
Okay. That's cool. That's a unique event.
Yes.
A Tap Room brings in big ass hitters. for their event.
What? Oh, but that's just an anniversary event.
Yeah, but I mean, it's a fest. It's called a fest.
Yeah, I guess that's true. I feel like anniversary Taxman, ones are a little weird, and they're kind of a little weird.
Taxman's thing. Yeah, their anniversary. Death and Taxes Day or whatever it's called. That's a bigger day. Like, that's a pretty good-sized event. And then Dark Lord Day.
Yep. Yeah, Dark Lord Day, you got to pay for your own.
Got to pay things. A fuckload to get in, too. Like, $200 a ticket? Eat a dick.
Yeah. I just think, like...
Maybe we shouldn't show up to Dark Lord Day like they didn't show up to the event.
Like, you know, kind of jumping into the Around Indiana section. I know this kind of got just kind of lost its way here towards the end. But, you know, Way Out Fest, put on by Pax Verum. Like, it sounds like it's going to be a bunch of crazy-ass beers. That's, like, something unique that you want to go to.
Yep. Meatful Things was something unique that we wanted to go to.
Yeah. Where are those? Where are the ones that make people want to spend $40-$50 to go? Like, as a beer consumer, I feel like I should be going to, even as a fucking podcaster, of someone in, you know, beer media, quote-unquote, not even remotely close, but in that vein, I should be going to multiple a year, and I've literally been to one Indiana one.
Yep.
You know, I want to go to Brews Cruz. I can't go because I have to parent that day, but that's the kind of thing that's like, ooh, that's interesting.
Like Hops and Coaster Drops sounds kind of interesting too.
Yeah. Like, I wouldn't mind trying to go to some of these just to see what they're like, because I haven't been to a lot of them, but it's just like, I kind of feel like I know what to expect when I get there. Like, what's the list? Let me see the list. Okay, I already kind of know what most of these Indiana places are going to bring, and that's not really doing anything for me.
Yep. So, it was fun. Beer Fests are dying. It's going to happen.
Yeah, I feel like eventually they'll perk back up. The beer industry's having a rough go at it right now. I think the rising costs of ingredients and stuff is really...
When there's so many, really we've literally in. Hit this,
there,
like...
There are way too fucking many.
We've hit this point where we're going to lose people who are not making traditional styles.
Yeah.
It's going to die. Like,
there's that. I mean, it seems like you have one or two outside of your control things happen, like with Black Acre. You know, Black Circle, you know, they
saved themselves, but yeah.
Yeah, but it took a community. It took a, you know, and, you know, then you kind of question, like, why didn't Black Acre go that route? I bet people would have helped in that regard.
Yeah, I bet. Yeah, tons of people. So, I don't know.
Yeah, but I could see there's going to be pain before we get back to what it was. But I mean, that's in every...
Ebbs and flow, baby.
Every industry you got. So, that Pax Verum, what a way out, way out there beer fest, I think is what it's called. That's in September. That Booze Cruise, which in is August. Put on by Copacetic, is like August 5th, I think. Our beer's supposed to be there. Our two beers are supposed to be there that we collabed with them in a science project on some white stout varieties. So, cannot wait to see how those turn out.
And then Hops and Coaster Drops is sometime in September, maybe.
Yeah.
And then you've got the Summerfest or Microbrew Festival or whatever.
No, that was last week.
Oh, was it? It's not this weekend?
Okay. Yeah, it was last Saturday. Because I was at Hot Boys. Got my Hot Boys shout out in here. After I went and saw Oppenheimer. And there were people there with the wearing the wristbands and had,
yeah, it was last week. I saw the check-ins and stuff. Yeah. Yep. So that one's over, but get out, check out a festival. Tell us we're wrong. We're not, but
just get out to the breweries, support them there too.
Give them their money. Like, go spend the goddamn money.
Cosmetic
with them.
Goodman. Like,
because look, I hate ever getting stuff for free. I just don't like it because I want to pay because that's what they do.
I mean, I like free stuff, but...
Pay them for their fucking beer. Pay them.
Yeah. Especially if you like their shit.
Get out, spend money, talk about them, share their stuff.
You're going to find a lot more variety at the brewery.
Pimp them out. That's the important part.
So with that, we will see you all next week.
Cheers, bro.
Cheers.